1 Corinthians chapter 7, we'll just jump right in, is a knock on church. You know, we're behind the times as far as sexuality is concerned. You know, we would say, you know, you shouldn't live together before you get married. And people look at us like, that's unheard of. That's not even sound. That's crazy. You people are living in a different age, in a different world. No, we're on the cutting edge, and I'll show you that here this morning. People have criticized us and criticized God. You know, he gives us this desire to have sex, and then he says, but don't. Like, what kind of cruel joke is that? What's that all about? No. God invented sex and made it pleasurable, and then he set parameters on how it's best expressed. And that has to do with the fact that he knows us better, and that if we do this outside of his parameters, we're going to really mess up. And very often, so we're going to be talking about sex here this morning because we're talking about 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Listen, I don't skip verses because they're not really comfortable to talk about or things like this. But we told you about this last week, so you know, if you have kids who are on the cusp of, you know, we're not going to talk about anything that's really vulgar or upsetting or anything like that. I don't go like that, but we're going to have a frank discussion about sex as the Bible has a frank discussion about sex. Now, if you go back to chapter 6, verse 9, know ye not that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God? Be not deceived, neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor abusers themselves with mankind, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners shall inherit the kingdom of God. List on the list, first thing, fornicators, those who are involved in sex sin. The sexually immoral, those people, they don't go to heaven. And so the Corinthians would write to Paul and say, well, if that's the case, how about just no sex whatsoever? If you're in danger of hellfire by having sex, the best remedy is just we'll all live celibate. I mean, even if we're married, celibate's better anyway, so we'll get divorced or live as, you know, celibate inside the, you know, marriage. And Paul's saying, maybe not the best idea, chapter 7, verse 1. Now, concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. And having said all things, I want to at least start out with this. It is good for a man not to touch a woman. That's a good thing. Okay? Everyone agreed so far? We're not talking about married. We're not talking about single. We haven't got that far. If you're saying, well, I'm a celibate guy, I'm living celibate, that's good. Okay? Celibate woman, celibate guy, that's good. Nevertheless, okay, we haven't even got to the... Now, there's a caveat there. Okay? Before we all get too carried away down that extreme, like the Corinthians, let's chuck it all. Let's all get single again and we'll just won't have sex at all. Isn't that the answer? Maybe not, verse 2. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, to avoid sex sin, to avoid being sexually immoral. Now, what does that entail? Everything. Almost everything except one thing. And we'll talk about the one thing. Let's talk about the everything. He doesn't break it out, but we have to. That includes sex outside of marriage, either extramaritally or premarital. Both of those things are out. Well, what about pornography? Out. What about masturbation? Yes, I said that. I don't enjoy saying that. I was going to say self-pleasuring. Then I said, no, I want to be frank because I don't want any ambiguity. One of the problems with the Church of Jesus Christ is ambiguity. I never heard that growing up. I never heard a message on that. That's regrettable. Anything that you could, no hooking up, no shacking up, that leads to breaking up. If you just do things that don't involve up, you're probably going to be okay, but I can't say that for sure. I say, what about like sexting? Bible doesn't say anything about sexting, right? Well, outside of marriage, that would come under fornication. You say, what about to your spouse? We ain't got that far, but I will say this. Make sure you don't have any accidents because that could prove very embarrassing, okay? And the Bible, the reason I bring up sexting, you know what that is. Let's go like this, if you know what that is. Okay, good. I don't want to go there. The reason I bring that up is because when we break new technological barriers, bring what you know about the Bible into those technological breakthroughs with you, and you'll be probably on the right track. You see what I'm saying? Anything that promotes selfishness or promotes lust outside of marriage, that's a very, very bad idea. We call that sin, and you're in danger of hellfire. You can't get to heaven by not doing that, but you can certainly go to hell by doing that and other sins as well. The wages of sin, as we read, is still death in Romans chapter 3 and chapter 6. There's no question about that. Sex sin will take you to hell, like any other kind of sin. But we're talking about sex sin here specifically this morning. Well, I'm going to have nothing to do with that. That's fine, except if you're married, there's different rules now. To avoid fornication, sex sin, let every man have his own wife, let every woman have her own husband. Let every guy have his own lover, his shack-up mistress, honey, on a, you know, a little chippy on the side kind of thing. And let every woman have her significant other. Now, you can put any things in words you want there, but Paul says, no, let every man have his own wife. He's promoting marriage. God invented marriage. We're not, you can change the definition, but it doesn't change anything. God still invented marriage, and this is his idea for marriage. No matter what you vote, one man, one woman, this is the verse, and among other verses, let every man have his own wife. Let every wife have her own husband. You say, well, okay, but I want to practice, I want to get good at this before we commit to marriage. That's a very, very, very bad idea. Why? Look at the message. Honey, you know they used to say, don't buy the cow if you can get the milk for free, and no angry women, please. I'm not, that's an old saying. I'm not, nobody's comparing anyone to a cow or anything like that. The idea is if you can get it for free, why would you commit? What you're saying to the, effectively saying to a woman who you're living with is this: I want sex, but I don't want commitment. I want to keep my options open. So keep trying to win my affection. Keep working hard at entertaining me while I keep my options open, while I look at the landscape and see if I have a better option. If I can't find one and I get old enough and desperate enough, I'll marry you. That's a really good message, hero. That is really spectacular. You're not practicing marriage, you're practicing divorce, and everybody knows that. Common sense would tell you that, but all the statistical data says people who live together before marriage, it's not that you won't be successful, but you've just decreased your chances significantly at being successful in marriage. But that shouldn't surprise us at all, okay? So we're trying to avoid fornication. Get a wife. Get a husband. That's what he's saying. Let every man have his wife, let every woman have her husband. Now, let the husband render unto his wife due benevolence. And likewise, also the wife unto the husband. Due benevolence, the good owed her. He's talking about sex, okay? Primarily, we're going to go beyond that. The language is a little ambiguous. You know, a lot of times in the Bible, the language is a little ambiguous on purpose. You know, Isaac is sporting with Rachel when Abimelech sees her, and it says, King James says sporting. They got it right, by the way. He's playing around is the idea. And we say, oh, we get it. We make the connection, and we don't have to go into graphic detail. Bible does that. When it does that, I want to do that too. But I do want to deliver the goods. I don't want to be so ambiguous that we don't get it. So if I connect dots that you haven't seen connected before, That's fine. I'm doing it very specifically. Let the husband, we're talking about that, let's take up the husband first. Because everyone, just all the guys here, just have a new favorite verse, right? The guy's going to bring his Bible to bed tonight. It's going to be highlighted. You know, he's going to write that in his wife's and, you know, put up something that keeps falling open to that verse. He's going to take that little ceramic bread box on the kitchen table with the promises in it. He's going to write one and stuff it in there. You know what I mean? This is every guy's favorite verse. And it says, let the husband render unto his wife due benevolence. The guy's saying, no problem. Here I am, honey. I'm ready to be benevolent. I'm, you know, show up early, stay late, work hard. You can count on me. Wait a second, Romeo. Cool your jets just a little bit. It does mean that. But what if she says, because here's the long and short of it. That body that you have, mister, is hers. Ladies, that body you have is his. When you say, I do, that's one of the things you promised. Why is that important? Because outside of marriage, he has desires that cannot be righteously satisfied except by his wife, and vice versa. And God knows that, and it's very, very important. You know, what gets me is, like, we do marriage counseling from time to time. People aren't always, Christians aren't always, let's say this right, they're not always hitting on all cylinders in that arena. Satan, he's a master. You gotta give the boy his props. He's always trying to get you to have sex wrong, either extramaritally or premaritally. Have sex when you're not supposed to. Then when you're supposed to, it's okay and it's good and great and thank God for it. Now he doesn't want you to ever do that. And so we have this, you know, I'm too tired. I have a headache. I'm too stressed and all the stuff that comes along with that. And by the way, while we're on the subject, too tired means I didn't save anything in the tank for you, honey. My day was already spent, between the work, you know, the kids, homeschooling, the laundry. I don't have time for you. You're not as important as me washing socks. Thanks for the message, honey. I got it loud and clear. That's not a good reason. Headache? Don't overuse that one. You know, I mean, you got a selfish jerk husband who says, I don't care about your headache. He's a selfish jerk, and people really do have headaches and sickness and stuff like that, and that's fine. That happens. We all understand that. You don't, like I say, don't overplay that card. He still has needs. You still have to address them sooner or later, and sooner is better than later, says God. Okay, that's not yours to play around with. That's your husband's. Okay, it's not your option. It's not your call. It's not you're with me so far. So husbands, because he took them up first, let's talk about this. Render to your wife due benevolence. Well, she, stop. This is always the problem. Are you going to tell me why the Bible's wrong? Because you're wasting your breath. You're wasting your time. It doesn't say render unto her due benevolence if she's young or if she's attractive. Or if she's not a shrew, or if she's, there's no or, okay? Yeah, but she, no, stop. It just says, your body's not hers. Now, what does that entail? What if she says, hey, good looking, come on over here, and you're thinking, yay, all right, things are going good. She goes, can you change this light bulb up and after your 4 months to change? That's part of her using her body, your body, which is hers. Isn't that correct? I mean, And by the way, if it's 4 months, I mean, come on, hire an electrician or something. Do 4 months, really? She's got to chase you along that far for you to do something? But what if she says, hey, handsome, and you're like, hoo-hoo. Not that I've ever heard that, but I mean, just, you know. And she says, why don't you come on over here? And I'm thinking, it's going so good. This is going to, she says, I got this book of poetry. Can you read this to me? You're like, No, where's my garlic? Where's my... Or I want you to watch this Jane Austen movie with me. That would be horrible. Is that rendering due benevolence too? I kind of think so. As I thought about this, as I prayed about this, I think so. And by the way, guy with the poetry book, that you're probably going to get what you're after. I mean, think it all the way through. If this is her way... Romance leads to sex with a woman. You guys got that much at least, right? I mean, you didn't get married yesterday, did you? I mean, you figured that part of it out, right? And that's why it's saying do benevolence. The things that do her. Where's she going to get romance outside of you? That's a big problem. That's a big problem. She wants to be romantic and she's married to us. I know. We're not romantic. I know. We got to work real hard at that. That's one of the things it's saying. Give her what she wants. Well, one of the things we talked about in the past, is you're not a good husband until she says you're a good husband. I don't care how much you say you're a good husband. If your wife's not on board with that idea, you're messing up somehow. You got to correct that. That's part of this due benevolence. Now let's talk about the other side of the coin, okay? Because that's the next part. Wives, give him what he wants. It's the only righteous way for him to get that. The only one. Well, he shouldn't be, stop. But he wants all the time, stop. Now the excuses come. We do this all the time. We're counseling somebody, and this is the way this should, and for anything, not just sex, forgiveness. You got to forgive her. She, oh, yeah, but, she, oh, we're not going to do what the Bible says. That's always going to be a problem, right? Only 100% time, only always. Wives, that body you have is designed in such and such a way to give your husband pleasure. Now, no excuses, no, okay, a headache will work every once in a while. We've already said that. Tired, that's very lame, okay? Give him what he wants, righteously, okay? If he's, I'm not talking about every possibility and stuff like that. If he's a selfish jerk, that's another issue. We can talk about that. We can work on that some other time. I can't give you all the rules of marriage, but Paul's not giving all the rules of marriage. He's saying to the Corinthians, yeah, celibate is good, but if you're married, the way to avoid fornication is by coming together as a couple, the one flesh relationship, God bless that. And you think about that? Have you thought about sex? Your guy's like, yeah, what else am I thinking about? Of course I've thought about that. No, I mean, have you thought about it in this way? Amoeba's just, there's one amoeba and it just splits not as two. Flowers procreate and a bee's involved. I don't think it's either pleasurable to the pistil or stamen. I don't think there's any pleasure involved. There's no intimacy. There's no like one flesh flower. You think of all the ways that there is for procreation that's not intimate. And God could have, like I was talking about a couple weeks ago, maybe I don't know, last week, Wednesday, I don't remember when I talked about stuff. Think about taste. He gave us taste buds. We could all eat grass like a cow and live forever, live for a long, long time. But he gave us taste buds. Isn't he glorious and good and grand? Think about sex. Isn't God awesome? Now, I know you're, I know, yeah, we don't have this Sunday morning. We're all prude and we don't want to talk about this and stuff like this. I want to talk about this at least this much. God is so good. He's so awesome. He's so clever. Now, that's what we want to do. Husband's going to render the wife due benevolence. Any questions? Good. Wife's going to likewise under the husband. But he's got an awful appetite for that. That's good. He's very in love with you, and he wants to express that a lot. Good. Now, what does the Bible say here about frequency? Not much. That's one of those mutually agreed on things. That's one of those. If your husband's, you know, after you all the time and you're like never, you're going to have to come to some sort of place where you can both live with, obviously. Obviously, but you got to remember, the one rule in the Bible is your body is his. Mister, your body's hers. I don't know any other way to say it. But let's keep moving. The wife hath not power over her own body. Well, we've said that, okay? Not your call. Now, if you just take that to heart, we've solved so many marriage problems already. Sorry, I talk to a lot of couples a lot of times about a lot of things. If you take this verse to heart, we've just cleared up a lot of them. Wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband. Likewise also, the husband hath not power over his own body, but the wife. Now we've just cleaned up the rest of the problems. No, I'm just saying, take that, and it's primarily talking about sex, but take it in any venue. I'm living for my wife. She is not upset. I'm living for my husband. He is not, he's happy. What is the Bible saying? Hey, don't be a selfish jerk. You know what our problem is in marriage? We're selfish jerks. When my wife says, or a man's wife says, what about this and this and this? Live with it. That's just the way it is. If you don't like it, so sad, too bad. You better be talking about loving Jesus, because if you've got anything else, you're messing up. Really? You can't talk? You just pull rank and shut her down and say that's just the way it is? Let's keep moving. I'm going to say something that I'll have to apologize for. Defraud ye not one. Listen, that's what it is. It's defrauding. You're withholding sex. You're defrauding. Well, I'll correct him. Women do that. They try to change our behavior. They try to fix us. Well, I'll just withhold sex. Defraud ye not one the other. Guys can do it too. Guys can do it too. Well, I won't speak to her. I won't talk to her. How does she like that? I'll fix her. Don't try to fix each other. Try to love each other and let God fix each other. One, you trying is a fool's errand to begin with. Two, it's not you're not designed to do that. Men are designed to lead godly. Women are designed to help. Help them be godly. That's all. There's something in women, not men, something in women. He's good, he's a nice guy, he's this, he's that. We'll get married and I'll change him. The things that isn't good about him, I'll change him. Guy gets married hoping she'll never change. There's something wrong with the program right from the get-go. So he's not on board with where you're trying to change him. So then you pull out the nag card. That's a very, very bad, very bad idea. I just love him. How about just love him? Let God change him. My wife's not a nag. You can tell because we're still married. I'm not joking. She's one of the problems in my life, which are myriad, by the way. She talks to the Lord, and then they gang up on me. It's helpful. She's really being a help. Thank you for praying about me. Thank you for noticing I'm a selfish jerk sometimes and praying to the Lord about it. I think I'm less selfish. Now, she pulls out the nag card. That's going to get the exact wrong. It won't work. It just won't work. It'll get the opposite result. Why do women do that? I don't know. They shouldn't. If they know their Bible, they wouldn't. So the guy withholds, the woman withholds, they're sleeping in the bed together in the opposite direction. Nobody's spooning, nobody's touching, nobody's cuddling. They're just on the opposite, just as far away on the mattress as they can possibly be without falling out. Satan's loving that stuff, and he's sleeping right in the middle. Just get that image in your mind. He loves that. No, we're not defrauding one another. That's not what the Bible's telling us. Defraud ye not one another, except... I'll give you an exception if you're really looking for one. Except, if it be with consent for a time, we both agreed that we're going to fast and pray all week, and one of the things we're going to fast is sex. We're going to have sex all this week, you said, Mr. Spiritual. Except it be with consent for a time that you may give yourself to fasting and prayer, but come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. Say that should be inconsistency. No, it should be incontinency. Lack of self-control. Incontinence. You know, incontinence, you wear the diapers and stuff. Sad condition. That's what he's talking about. You have no self-control. We'll fast and we'll pray. But look at what he's saying. But I speak this by permission, not by commandment. There's no verse I know in the Bible Paul saying says you should do that. Oh, you're all spiritual? Yeah, okay. For a time, if you both agreed on it. One of you is not with the program, then it's back to defrauding. Because, by the way, if you want to fast for a week or a month or 40 days, go right ahead. Your body's still your spouse's. And this isn't saying that you have to or even that you should. He's saying, yeah, okay, if you feel like that's something you want to do, that's great. But you better come together again. Now, I just took separation and threw it out the window. Well, we're splitting up. We're going to try, be on our own. You what? Where's your verse? Well, we don't have a verse, but, oh, so you're acting outside of a verse, and that's going to be your behavior? And you're going to, why would you possibly do that? Listen, intimacy is intimate. It's for a reason. God made it that way. It's the glue that holds the marriage together. He's so glorious and good. He knows that you can't hate each other, be aggravated with each other, be mad at each other, and be intimate. You can hate each other, be mad at each other, and separate. That's a very, very bad idea. Don't give me a reason why that's okay. I'll give you the only reasons I've ever seen. When a husband, or I guess a wife, but 99.9% of everything I've ever seen, it's the husband, is abusive to the point where you're physically, or the children are physically unsafe. You have to protect yourself by getting out of there or getting him out of there. And you have to protect the children. In case of a guy who comes in all the time, all tanked up and starts yelling and beating the kids or something like that, he has to go to jail or something. He has to go to counseling. He has to get help. That's a good time for separation. Other than that, you don't have anything. No, he's thoughtless. You mean he's a man? That's not a reason to get separated. You know what? We'll talk about marriage and divorce next week. Okay, we're gonna get there, and I knew that going in. He's a selfish jerk. Like you just described every guy I've ever met, including me. It takes about 10 years for a couple to think as a couple. It does. From everything I've ever learned on the subject, from my own experience, it takes about 10 years. So, and you're figuring out this, okay, we're in a relationship, it's going to last forever until death do us part. And the guy's figuring out, it takes him about 10 years. Wife, she probably knows before she's even engaged. Women are different. They're way ahead of us on emotions and on relationships. Guys, I'm talking to you. Lean in, okay? Women, just let your mind wander, okay? It takes about 10 years for you guys to figure it out that you're in a relationship that's going to last forever and what that relationship is supposed to look like. Don't scratch the 7-year itch. There's nothing wrong with your wife. She's a woman. She's the way God made her. She's not supposed to be a male version of you. You want a good buddy who looks good in a dress. That's what you want. That's not the way God designed it. So you're thinking there's something wrong with her. She's nagging me all the time. She's this, she's that. Divorce. And then you start, what are you, 7 or 8 years along? You're close. You're almost there. You're almost to the point where I get this marriage thing, right? So get another one and start all over from square one. That'll work. It won't. Because all the problems, which probably most of them are you. I mean, listen, guys, I love you like brothers to me. You are brothers to me. But you're a selfish jerk and you're an idiot. Grow up. I mean, listen, how else to say it? This is somebody who's loving you saying that. The problem is if when it's with us, if we get another woman, we're going to bring all those problems back into it. And the thing that we don't like about women in general, well, that new woman's going to have all those same problems. She's going to want to watch Jane Austen movies with you. Am I saying the right name there, by the way? Yeah, not Austin Powers. Sense and Sensibility, Pride and Prejudice, yeah. And guys are like, anathema, I don't want that. It's not. But the new woman, she's gonna want to take you to she's going to go to that Anland Festival up in Newfoundland or wherever it is, and she wants you to take her to the ice cream social like Gilbert, and this is going to happen. Why are you going to do all that stuff again? You see what I'm saying? It's stick with it. You promise forever. You got the right one. That's not the issue. Now, keep working it. Keep working it. Keep building it. Keep learning. Keep growing. Don't defraud one another. Okay, for a little bit, only if you really feel moved by it. But don't make that a long time. Satan's going to, he's going to have a field day because of your lack of self-control. I'm only saying this by permission, not by commandment. For I would, and they say, okay, I got it. Your point is couples should be having sex often, and yes, that's my point. That's my point entirely. Anything else is satanic, and yes, it is. I'm not talking about woman's going through chemotherapy and is physically ill, and I'm not talking about stuff like that. You get that. You nod with me and say, yeah, I know you're not talking about that. I'm just talking about the normal, healthy, red-blooded Americans you're supposed to be as often as works for you as a couple. This helps. Break down, mister, and buy a book or DVD. We show this to pre-marriage people. Really good. It's Jimmy Evans, Indestructible Marriage. Want to learn how to build that even before you start? Very, very helpful. It's an old book, Active Marriage by Tim LaHaye. Tim's gone on now. The reason I got this here is I just want to show you something. It's got all kinds of charts and graphs. You say charts and graphs, that's not very sexy. It is. This is making my case for me. It's talking about couples who have sex before marriage as opposed to couples who wait till their wedding night to have sex for the first time. And what their pleasure in marriage is measured by completion. wink, wink, and how often and how satisfying. The couples who wait on their marriage, they're knocking it out of the park. Couples who pray together. I'm not saying pray together during or before sex. I'm saying pray together. The couples who read the Bible together. Couples who go to church. And it's all here. And the people who are having the most best sex are 40-year-old Christian women who are married to their first husband, and they waited to their wedding night to have sex, and they are committed Christians. They're having the best sex. Raise your hand if that surprises you. It can't surprise anybody. You mean we do it God's way and it works out the best? Who would have thought that? But everybody except you guys. Everybody except you guys. It came out in the 80s, this whole thing. They call it Revenge of the Church Ladies. Remember that, was a Billy Crystal character on Saturday Night Live, the church lady? They called it the Revenge of the Church Ladies. I thought it was kind of funny. And it was like, it turned everybody on their ear for one news cycle. You know, like, yeah, we told you this was the best way to do it God's way. And then, you know, then somebody bombed something or killed somebody or something, and then it was a new news cycle. Don't let it die. Keep it, perpetuate that. People who are living together before they're married, having sex outside of marriage, are killing and destroying their marriage. Now, you say, but we did that, and then we got married, and we're doing okay. That's because God redeems. So I'm not saying everything's perfect all the time, forever. People have gone extramaritally and still have a great marriage because God can redeem. God's wonderful. I praise his holy name. I'm always saying, you know, like we're talking a couple of stuff like this. The first thing is always, like in a situation of adultery, forgive. Now, that doesn't mean you have a license to keep doing that. I mean, at some point you say, okay, you're making a mockery of our marriage, get out. And that might be the right and good and godly thing to do at some point. Again, we'll talk about divorce next week, and the Bible has things to say about divorce. Say, okay, Adam, you got me convinced. That's how we were supposed to be. We were supposed to have, you know, talk these things out. I'm here for her. She's there for me. I got it. Okay, all the single people saying, well, what about us? Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Verse 7, for I would that all men were even as myself. What's even as myself? I'm married. He's talking about sex. He's talking about marriage. And he's talking about, I wish you guys weren't married. That's a good way to be, Paul's saying. Listen, right off the bat, if you're not married, never get married, that's fine. You're not broken. But every man hath his proper gift of God, one after this man and one after another. It's a gift of God to be single. Really? Yeah, you say, I don't see that at all, because it's not your gift. If you're single and want to be married, that's probably because that's what God put in your heart. And that's probably a good thing. And most of us get married. 90% of us will try at least once in our life. So if you want to be married and you just never have been, or you probably will be, statistically. But he's saying, not being married, that's okay. It's not like you're incomplete, you're broken, you need to be fixed. Okay, there's nothing like that in the Bible. I know a guy who's like lived to be like, only about 33, but he was single his whole life, and he lived a wonderful, dynamic life for God. I'm speaking of Jesus Christ, despite the Mary Magdalene chaotic, abominable heresies that are floating around out there. You don't have to be married to live for the Lord. And I think there's a lot of situations where single would be good. Think about Paul. He's going from place to place to place, dragging a wife the whole time. You know, when he's being stoned at Lystra, what's his wife doing? Having a panic, just like, you know, freaking out and stuff like, you know, that would be kind of a hard on a woman. So he knows that. So I got me and I got Barnabas. We don't have any of that. We're celibate. We're cool. We're living for the Lord. And we can have a, you know, prison stay or a stoning, and it'll be fine. You know, God will either raise us up or he won't, or I'll go home and be with Jesus. None of that stuff. But he's saying you can still live for the Lord and still be single. I like that. Doesn't command it. Doesn't command it. You remember at the beginning. Isn't it good? You know, the Corinthians are saying, if sex is such a problem, let's just be done with it. He said, no, that could be a problem in and of itself. If you're married, that's definitely a problem. You have to ask your spouse. But the other part about this is you don't have to get married. You can serve the Lord. If that's your calling, your gifting, and he uses the same word as he uses in 1 Corinthians 12 when he talks about the gifts of the Spirit. It's the same word. Singleness is a gift to some people. Now, you're saying, it wouldn't be a gift to me. Listen, it wouldn't be a gift to me. Single. Bad idea. Because he didn't call me to be single. I think, like, if you're going to pastor a church, you can't be single in my thinking, just because you need a wife to do wife ministry stuff. That she's indispensable. Only person's church works hotter than me is Sue's. Maybe Ron. I don't measure these things. But it's a gift. My gift is having her. But it's a gift, and it's okay to be single. Despite all your friends trying to fix you up with somebody. I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. That's a good thing. Okay? Nothing wrong with that. It's good. Now, we forbid them to marry? No. In 1 Timothy, Paul calls that forbidding to marry. He calls that a satanic doctrine. There is one prominent church that we all know about that forbids their clergy to marry, and it's caused nothing but heartache and problems. Nothing but problems. And so, you know, I always think about the priesthood, the Roman Catholic priesthood. I'm talking about that, and you know I'm talking about that. There's two kinds of people that are attracted to the priesthood. There's only two kinds. People say, I don't care about the celibate thing. I love God so much, I want to serve him, and I'll gladly lay that down. That's fine. It attracts that kind of person and perverts. That's all. And if you ask me, guess what there are more of. But that's just my own take. You can disagree with that if you want. I don't have a verse. I've just noticed some things. So that's a bad idea. It's not a biblical idea. But if you are saying, I'm serving God all by myself, single, I love it, that's no problem. No issue. He's saying, I want you to be like me. Was Paul single? Yes, he was. Was he always single? No, he was married at one time. He was a member of the Sanhedrin. You had to be married. Good Jewish boy. They all thought in terms of marriage and procreation and having, children to leave the family land to and things like that, and to pass down their godly lineage and things like that. He was married. At this point, what, did she die? Did she divorce him after he became a Christian? Bible silent, so we don't want to speculate there. But he's saying, no, it's good if you're even as I, if you can abide that way. But if you cannot abide, this is a big point here. If you cannot abide, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn. The word burn here just means burn, okay? You can make it whatever you want. But I think, I'll tell you this. He's not saying it's better to marry than to go to hell. I just look at the context. He's talking about burn with the idea of lust and passion, inflamed with. I mean, if like you're a single guy and all you can think about is getting a woman, that's one, don't be a creep. Two, don't go hunting. Let God bring you one. Three, straighten things out with God. You know, he's probably preparing a woman for you. And if you're always thinking about that, he's probably taking a long time to prepare a woman for you for obvious reasons. He's got a lot of work to do on her. She's going to live with you, you know what I mean? So, remain calm, breathe. God will bring along somebody. If you can't constrain yourself, it's better to marry than to burn. So we have kids who want to get married all the time. They're thinking like, you know, I'm serious about Jesus Christ and I want to wait till I'm married. So then they want to get married when they're like 14 or something. Well, I don't know, 14 might be a little young. Hey, what is the right age? When they're old enough to handle it. Now I was talking to Daniel last week. Was it Wednesday night or Sunday night? We were talking about this, right? His parents, not until you're out of school, college they mean, and you get your advanced degrees and whatever else, and you shouldn't be getting married then. I mean, you got a lot on your plate, and then you establish your practice of law or of medicine or whatever that is, right? Finish your residency and stuff like this. And when you're 33 and you got a good practice going, now you want to think about marriage. And by the way, all that interim time, be celibate. Really? Really? So we have kids and they want to get married. I get it. This is their verse. They got a verse. I'm thinking like, I'm with that. You're serious about the things of the Lord. You want to put this on a back burner until you get married, but you want to get married pretty quick so that, yeah, I understand that. I totally understand that. We don't have age restriction. I mean, there's laws. But my whole thinking is like, well, I'm going to do pre-marriage counseling when you're mature enough. Because I got to tell you something. I know 55-year-olds and 60-year-olds who aren't mature enough. And I know 17, 18-year-olds who'll marry once for life successfully, and they'll be like, the rest of us will take notes that they're doing it so right. I know that. It's not an age thing. What do we got here? If you're happily married, sex inside marriage, often, praise God. Outside of marriage, nothing doing. Shut it right down. God's got parameters. I was reading in Isaiah, and I'll end with this. I know I'm going to go over a couple minutes, but only a couple minutes, okay? We were in Isaiah earlier this Wednesday night, and I hope I'm going to find it really quick. Yeah. Chapter 48. You don't have to turn there. Verse 18 says this. God saying, oh, that thou hadst hearkened to my commandments. Oh, I wish you'd do what I tell you to do, God saying. You can almost hear the melancholy, the longing in his voice. Oh, I wish you'd listen to me. Why? Because he's so anti-sex and he's this cosmic killjoy. And every time we want to do something fun, he's there to rain on our parade. And because he's like a control freak and he's trying to manipulate our lives, right? No. You guys should be shaking your head no furiously when I say things like that. No. Say, no, that's not like he is. Oh, that thou hadst hearkened to my commandments. Then had thy peace been as a river and thy righteousness as the waves of the sea. Imagine your righteousness is like the waves of the sea. Just keep on coming to the beach, just pounding the beach. That's how righteous you are. Just that constant. Just your what is it saying there? That your peace would have been as a river. Your shalom, your blessing, all that I have for you. It'd been like a river, just a torrent, just a massive raging river. You jump in, you're swept away. That's how your peace would have been. If you'd only listen to what I say. That's not the heart of a dictator, guys. That's the heart of a father. Sex is really, really going to mess you up. Learn how to handle it godly. He's got a wonderful blessing in marriage for us. Outside of marriage, hands off. Let's stand. Let's pray. Lord, you know our culture. You know where we live. We are living in Sodom and Gomorrah in the days of everything's right and ain't nothing wrong. Help us, Lord, to figure this stuff out. And it's easy enough to figure out, Lord. You're right, and everything that says you're not right is wrong. And Satan's a liar, and he would destroy our marriages if we gave him half a chance. Lord, just help us get this part right. We want to be those who are following your instructions in such a way that would glorify you. And Lord, help us get our message out. It's a better message. It's helpful, and it's healthy, and it's good for our communities, and for our families, and for our lives, and for our marriages. We want to follow your instructions. Boy, we really do. Help us to take these verses to heart, and the time that we've spent in your word, help it to make a big, vast difference in our lives. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.